It's Friday, November 29th, 2024, and you're listening to episode 628 of Fear the Voot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 38 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Voot. My name is Dan.
This is Mary.
This is Doug.
And this is Wayne.
Alrighty, so last episode we talked about our bucket list for game mastering, games that we want to run, have not had the opportunity to, but this is the stuff we are individually itching to run before the day that we no longer run games. So I intend to run them in the afterlife, so y'all plan accordingly. But what we're going to do this episode is we are going to take the topic that Doug had before and approach it from the other angle. So this is Doug's topic, part two. I was about to say taken from the backside, like, no, that is not where I'm trying to go. So we're just going to say part two-ish. And these are instead games that we want to play, but have not had the opportunity to play in. Now, we may have game mastered these games, but we have not played them. And we want the opportunity to actually participate in them as a player character. Who's feeling randy and wants to start?
I'll go first.
All right, this Wayne, you're up.
Because you hit the nail on the head right there. I have run Dresden Files so many times, campaigns, one-shots, whatever. I want to play it. I have never been able to play it. I've never got the chance to play it. Never got a chance to make my own character and explore the character and just get a chance to play through a campaign. And I really want to. I love the game. I love the setting. But it's always been running it.
Have you thought about what kind of character you would play? I know some of the general archetypes. I'm not a big Dresden fan, but I know at least, like, you know, White Court and all that kind of stuff.
Part of it would depend on the power level of the game and where what would fit in. If we were going high power level, I want to be a Knight of the Cross.
Yeah.
That is my definite go-to. But if you can't be that, then, yeah, Wizard. A wizard is the most versatile. You can do just about anything, but you got to get beat up first for it.
Now, I have a question here. And of course, this is not to validate or invalidate your request, because this is just what we want.
Right.
How reasonable it is irrelevant to whether we want to do it or not. One of the things that has always sort of intimidated me about running Dresden is I haven't read the novels. And nothing against Jim Buscher of the Dresden universe, just not my thing. So I personally have never been inclined to run it. Would you want someone who has a really heavy knowledge of the setting to run it? Or if someone simply had read the RPG source book, which is what was Your Game, Our World, or whatever you read, I guess it would be the Our World one, then would that be sufficient? Or do you want someone like you, or I think Mary's read the books? And
well, ideally, I want Jim Butcher to run this for me.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah, but I would be happy to play in a game with somebody who, you know, doesn't know the setting as well, but has read through the setting that's in the books.
So it's at least,
I would still enjoy it and still have a lot of fun in it.
Yeah.
I would love to sit in a game where somebody has read all the books, knows the setting,
lore.
And has the deep lore to mix into it.
Yeah, that certainly does limit your pool of GMs, but feasibility was not a criteria here.
Right.
Or criterion, anyway.
Yeah, I would play it and I would be happy with somebody that doesn't have the full understanding.
Criteria?
But I would really love that deep level.
Thanks.
Love how Wayne's talking about his game and Mary and I are trying to figure out conjugations. All right, but that would be interesting. So my first one, I'm just going to get it out of the way. This will surprise no one. Wayne, you can leave the room if you need to survive this. I really want to play an Injustice Gods Among Us superheroes game. You know, I don't think, to the best of my recollection, even putting Injustice aside, that I have ever played in a superhero game outside of real small one-shots, like Dan Frensky did run a superheroes game for me, where we were like superhero cops.
Right.
But I don't think I've ever played like in a mainstream Marvel DC sort of setting for a superhero game. And certainly outside of conventions, I've never played in one. But I would love in general to play a campaign that is a superhero's campaign, But if I was to narrow it down to a specific storyline, I still want to play a villain in Injustice Gods Among Us who's basically hiding. And Mr. Freeze is usually my go-to, but wouldn't have to be Victor Freeze, but just someone who's existing in the periphery, kind of a mashup of DC and Necessary Evil, because the few remaining good guys either aren't good guys anymore or are trying to stop the other good guys who aren't good guys anymore. And so we just kind of do our best to stay off of Superman's radar and otherwise exist in that world. And
yeah, the only reason superhero game isn't on my list is because I have played in a superhero campaign, so I can't really call it bucket, even though I want more.
Yeah, no, I've got some of those too. I want more is a different topic, but yes, yep. I have some where I want to revisit. Maybe there's a third or fourth show there of things we've done but are not satisfied we've completed. We're not done with yet. All right, now that Wayne's out of the furnace, Mary?
We're going to start with, again, the character concept I have had the longest and never gotten to manifest is a game where I can actually play a necromancer.
Oh, I have. Oh, they're fun.
Playing through Baldur's Gate 3 was the first time I've gotten to, like, make a PC who is a straight-up necromancer yep. and play through the game without having to be evil or good based on the fact that I can raise the dead.
Yeah, I played... Okay, so I'm going to steal your thunder here for 1 second, then I promise I'll pass it back. I played in I don't remember who ran the game, but I did in a D&D game. Not Baldur's Gate. It was the tabletop pen and paper. I did play a necromancer, and I played one who was neutral. And the way that I explained as being neutral is that he will only raise the willing dead. So, for example, if someone dies in a murder, then he might bring that person back as a skeleton or zombie or something to help avenge their own death.
Yeah.
And so there was a degree, and I don't remember the details, but I had some kind of basic divination or something. This is an older edition of D&D to where I would use to divine whether this person wanted to come back.
Right. I mean, you can always go back to speak with dead, just like I'm going to ask you before
yeah, exactly.
I do
speak
it.
Speak with dead. Yeah. How'd that feel? Or do what they did in the D&D movie and leave them hanging on the second question.
That was fun. Yeah. And part of the concept I had, like, again, was trying to find ways to make a necromancer not inherently evil. And one of them that I had toyed with was not raising intelligent dead.
Okay. So you stick to like...
Like if you, you know, find a cave bear that died and summon that skeleton.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Yeah. Things that aren't...
Sue the T-Rex.
Sentient. Yes, exactly.
Who's that's, in St. Louis right now.
Which is why that's my favorite Dresden Files book. Necromancers. But yes.
Yeah, there's certainly no small number of basic undead stats to fill that kind of thing. I'm just mentally running through even in the current edition. They do have non-humanoid skeletons and bone-type monsters. So I'm with you. That was on my bucket list. I've just gotten it crossed off. Otherwise, we would be right there in the same boat.
Well, I'll just sit in my boat alone then.
All right. So I went for the willing. You went for simply those that lack moral agency.
Yeah.
Have you had the opportunity to do it, but the game masters have always said that forces you to be evil?
I have had the opportunity to build a character who would have become a necromancer, but never got that far.
Ah.
In terms of power level or other things.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right. Doug, what is your first one?
Okay. My first one is, it's not necessarily this specific setting, but it's in this style. It's basically be based off of Stargate. You know, I just like that idea of ancient Egypt meets sci-fi, exploring different worlds without a ship too, a little bit. Going around the galaxy in a spaceship is cool, but I kind of just like the idea of hopping to different dimensions and stuff.
It also does create for some interesting storylines, because if that technology is lying around, then you have to answer the same question Stargate did of who left it there. How did it get here?
Yeah.
Did ancient humans build it? You know, in some sort of, I mentioned Graham Hancock when we were prepping the show, you know, that sort of model, or is it, were there aliens here, or is this transdimensional or whatever?
Were the gods some other race of being?
Yeah, exactly. Or But it also would be kind of fun to be in a situation where it's like, yeah, we may not have your technology, but one, C4 will still kill you. And two, even if we can't build your technology, it's not stopping us from ripping it off and shooting back with it. Wayne, what is your second idea?
All right. So for my second one, this could be any genre, could be any system, any setting. None of that part of it matters. I want a settlement building game as an RPG.
Oh, boy.
It could very well be a post-apocalyptic. It could be a Western. Could be whatever. I want the purpose of the game to be we have a settlement that we're trying to build up.
Yes.
We have to go out to look for resources. We have to go out to fight against things that are going to invade in. But we have NPCs that we're getting to know and we care about. And we start doing projects to build up walls and just that whole concept of settlement building, not just defenses and military, but economy, food, things like that. I want that to be part of the game. Something you have to consider.
And not something that you just sort of randomly abandon to go adventuring.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because while it was both comedy and abbreviated, that was one shot. I actually just ran this at Fear the Con with Assault on Fort Brodor, where
it was that. Yes.
The basic setup of it was you exist in Brodor's crazy mountain fortress, which unfortunately or fortunately is in fact actually a real thing. And you had to collect resources and do things during the day and deal with stress and whatever. And then there'd be a phase where, like, you do things around the house or around the camp, or you'd go out on scavenging runs, and then there'd come a phase where something attacks. Now, of course, the main enemy was the Pinkertons trying right. to get a magic card from Brodor, but I just went ahead and said, you know what? Every apocalypse has happened. Aliens, demons, post-nuke mutants, they're all there. But your real enemy is Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah, I can think of so many video games that have that concept of you have so much time to do prep.
Yeah.
7 days to die.
So, yeah.
Or,
and that's, you know, where I got a lot of my ideas was from the video game realm. Now, certainly it was not a well-tuned system and didn't need to be because it was comedy. But the stuff I looked at to kind of contemplate how I would run it was I looked at things like RimWorld. I looked at things like This War of Mine. I mean, there's a whole list of video games that I think do a great job from a variety of genres, a variety of places on the spectrum between dramatic and comedic that really give us a basic model of how we would do this in terms of a tabletop role-playing game.
So some of the really good ones even have interpersonal relationships. I cannot remember which game it was, but it was one of these, I think maybe like Zombie Nation or something, where you have NPCs and who you choose to send out on a mission will determine how others look at you. Like there's a mother and daughter. If you send the mother out on a scavenging mission, the daughter dislikes you. If you send the daughter out, the mother dislikes you. Huh. And it starts to create
Rebuild
this tension
had something
inside.
Like that, but it wasn't that detailed.
Yeah, this one was detailed enough that each person had their own storyline. And it was specifically things like that of, you know, if characters fall in love, they're not going to be happy if you send the other one into danger. If that person actually gets injured, then they're not just unhappy with you. They are angry and ready to start working against you and the power structure.
Yeah, brief aside there before I get to my second idea. Speaking of the game Rebuild, which is a somewhat, well, this was actually Rebuild 3, is a somewhat old zombie survival sort of game.
I still occasionally load it up. I just love that game.
It's
so
I've got it on my phone. They have the full port of it on phone now, so I play it there. But if you play it long enough, you will eventually, and it's a rare item, but the most powerful scientific item in the game to like boost your research stat is the Book of FTB 9000 Compliance. I'm not making that up. Dead serious. It is in the game. All right. So for my second idea, I'm going to get this one out of the way. I, for a long time, have wanted to play a game where we play ourselves. And I am not necessarily suggesting an isekai sort of setup, because I think it is very hard for us to plausibly play that transition of, oh, I'm at work in 2024, and all of a sudden I'm in Dungeons and Dragons. I think it's very hard to do that. Now, I think on a prior episode, we did say maybe it'd work if we started like a year in. You were at work in 2024. You got transported to Forgotten Realms, and now you've been there for a year. But really, my thought is more go with something very modern, very real world. And Wayne, I don't remember the name of it, but you mentioned that you've got a game where you like randomly roll up an apocalypse.
There's the end of the world. There's a series of different types of apocalypses in there, but you then can randomize what type of it.
Yeah.
So let's say it's a zombie apocalypse. Well, there's a lot of different types of zombies. So you roll up. Is this a undead one? Yeah. Is it a fungus has taken over the brain?
Or
is it this, nanotech?
Or is this aliens or demons or nuclear war? There's all these things in there, and the players at least do not really know what's about to happen. And the way I want to do it specifically, because I think people both tend to be simultaneously too hard on themselves and too proud of themselves. What I want to do for character creation is that person leaves the room, everyone else makes their character. And then the next person leaves the room and everybody makes that person's character. And you can have a minor discussion and say, okay, can I convince you guys that I should be like this instead of that? And it's a straight up and down vote. If they say no, there's no debate, no hurt feelings. We could use a point by system so everyone's balanced, so we're not being mean to anyone. There's, I think, ways we could do this, but I really want to play a game where we play our real world selves in an outlandish situation, whatever that is, whether that's ending up in another setting or we continue in the real world and just something happens we have to deal with, but never had the chance to do it, which is sad because I think the systems and the social contracts exist to make it happen.
Yeah, it's one of those concepts that you have to be very careful of who you're playing it with. I've done it once and it was not the correct group of people with the correct egos to do it well.
Yeah. I mean, heck, it's been interesting to ask people, if I was in D&D, what character class do you think? No, don't take an online quiz. Don't decide for yourselves. Just ask somebody else, what do you think I would be? Or if Shadowrun happened and both the Awakening and Goblinization occurred and I didn't remain human, which I think was, what, 60% of the population stayed human?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Then what is it you think I would be or where do you think I would go? And so that is a game I've had stuck in my noggin for a long time. Mary, what's your second idea?
So my second concept is, again, one that isn't system reliant. It's the idea that people are playing multiple characters. I have never gotten to play a game where you have a group of people that you're developing at the same time. Each player has a group of people that they're playing.
So are you trying to build a community? Is it a community that you're...
It could be that, or it just could be that you have multiple people with multiple different abilities and talents that you are in control of.
And I will assume here you're talking about something that's a bit more detailed than a character funnel.
Yes, yes. As much fun as I have in DCC, this is not...
Yeah, we're not
talking
about...
Let's see who survives.
Yeah, DCC being Dungeon Crawl Classics for anyone who's not deep in that lore, but... The setup of that is you get a whole bunch of absolute garbage characters, and the one you go on to play in the game is the one that survives.
And most of these games stop after everybody dies because the fun part is seeing who survives.
I'll say, Mary, I think that idea, a lot of people, and I had this in the past, where a lot of people would dismiss that just straight out of the gate, saying, I don't think you could play them fairly. I don't think you could handle the relation, not you specifically, but
right.
I don't think a person could do this well. And I think I have gotten past that hurdle because I have now done this in at least two games. There was a Transformers game where I was playing and I played a full combiner. I played all the parts of a combiner and they had disagreements. They bickered with each other. They fought with each other. They agreed on things. They disagreed on things. There was one of them as a total whack job that none of them knew what to do with. And they had a shared backstory and all this stuff. And then the second time I did it is in our over-mentioned Gnarl Sir William Saren game. Chad didn't have a problem with me. I mean, Gnarl was my main character. But at any given moment, I was playing almost always at least two characters, which was Gnarl and then his sort of comedic foil, Rot. But then he also had several major characters in his little gnoll tribe, and Chad just let me play them all. So I played Gnarl's own bodyguard, I played his mate, I played the shaman that he was trying to train up because Rot, who was a more powerful shaman, was such a dick. And so I absolutely believe it is a workable idea, though I saw a lot of game masters dismiss it out of hand before they finally let me do it.
I've been in a few games with it, but usually it'll be one player wants that and the other players don't. So you have one player has multiple characters that they'll switch between, and occasionally they'll be there at the same time. That gets a little difficult when you're talking to yourself.
Right. And it's one of those things where you can, I've come close to it a couple of times by playing somebody who's got familiars, and you play yourself and the familiars. Or I played a character who had two bodies at one point. They were telepathically linked, same personality, but had two physical beings.
Fantasy version of Altered Carbon.
Yes, but that's as close as I've ever gotten.
Yeah.
Part of it is that game master instinct of wanting to have more than just this one into the world.
Yeah.
But it is like, I have an idea for a character, except I can't fit it all into one character, so I want to build more than that.
Yeah.
And
it is doable. It's absolutely doable.
A settlement building game would be good for that.
It would.
A settlement building game in Injustice.
A Dresden Files settlement building game
in Injustice. Yes.
We're just going to stack these all together into some absolute abortion of a game.
Well, I can play a necromancer in a settlement building game in Dresden Files in Injustice. Yeah, this will work.
Actually, yeah, necromancer would be great for a settlement building game. As long as the necromancer survived the apocalypse, society rebuilds. Yes.
Hey, we don't have enough people to work the fields. We need some skeletons out there working the fields.
Yeah.
All right, Doug, you're up. What is idea number two?
A game that's based off of Greek mythology.
Ooh, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, like the whole gods and stuff. And like maybe you're on the Odyssey and you're like going around the seas trying to avoid sirens. And
so very like, Homerian.
Yeah, you could do that, Homer. Or it could be like really anything. You could even be helping Hercules with one of his labors or something like that. But just basically Greek mythology, you know, like maybe you have to please the gods or something like that. Very Clash of the Titans style.
Right. So, but you want to play specifically in that era as opposed to something translated into Greek mythology exists, but we're in modern day.
Yeah. It's that era, you know, Trojan War maybe like might be part of it or something like that.
I was thinking Hercules and Zenith.
Yeah.
I watched so much of those shows. Oh,
I've tried to base characters because the first episodes of Xena, you have this character who is like, was an ex-evil general and is trying to, like, that redemption story is there and then gets forgotten about because it's Xena. But I've tried to base things on that character before. That's.
You know, what's, I think, a little interesting there is going back at least to second edition D&D, that did have explicit support for playing different eras of history. I think the issue I have is every time I've said fantasy, people end up in one of two places, urban fantasy or medieval fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Playing something, say, like in the Bronze Age or the real early Iron Age just doesn't really seem to float. Like something that I think would be hard to run, but I would find interesting, and you'd be talking about roughly the same era of history. And this is not one of my bucket list items. It's just something I've randomly contemplated, is running an Old Testament game.
Yeah.
And do the same sort of thing of, because for example, if you go to like the story of King David, it says that King David had a group of his mighty men, and basically they were the world's first D&D party. I mean, it talks about how they just wandered around kind of finding things to fix and, you know, bad guys to take out and wrongs to right and whatever. And it's set, obviously, nowhere near the high Middle Ages or whatever. And I remember even in like, oh, I'm blanking out now on the name of the book. The second edition even had a deities book that had the stats and the details worked out for all the Greek deities. Yeah. It's just nobody ever played it that way.
Yeah. I would definitely play in a Greek mythology era game.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love the idea of that era where the gods are petty and, you know, you can offend one and then suddenly things are going bad for your party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're very, very immediate, very meddlesome. And
very horny.
Yes. Yes, very horny.
The closest I've ever come to a game like that is World of Darkness had a Scion setting where you were playing the modern day children of gods. So the gods are real, but that's as close as I've ever gotten.
Yeah, you better believe we did an ancient Greece game. I would, one, play a male, and two, a male with no females in his life. Because otherwise I know where the drama's going. Like in a Conan game, I'm totally playing a chainmail bikini chick, but not in a Greek game. All right, no, we won't linger on that thought. Wayne.
All right, so my last one, this is one I actually have thought about running a few times, but I think I would enjoy playing it more. And I need the right kind of GM for it. I need a history buff.
Okay.
Because I want to play in a slider style game.
Ooh.
Where you are going universe to universe, alternate history to alternate history. And one of the things I love in gaming is discovering new worlds, discovering things. So when you finish up the one arc and then you slide to the next world, you then have a whole new world to discover. And you have to figure out what's different about the history in that world. And then occasionally, when you want to do something extra special, then the GM's like, okay, next week you're going to a world where the physics work a little differently. I'd like you to build your character, the same character, in this system. So you go to, say, a world that is a fantasy world, and now suddenly you have magic for this arc only. And then when you leave this world, you don't have magic anymore.
Yeah.
But I love that. I love making characters and systems, so I love that idea.
But it would still be the same base character. It's not something like, say...
No, you are the same person. It's just the world you came in...
It's just like a Quantum Leap or Scott Bakula is not Scott Bakula in any of these worlds.
Yeah, no, you are you. You have just done what you've done. You've jumped into this new world through the portal, except in this world, magic is real and you can tap into it because everyone can tap into magic in this world. It's just part of that universe. But most of the stories wouldn't be like that. Most of them, you're just jumping in, discovering a alternate history of some sort. Something went different. Now it's a drastically different world, and you do whatever you do in each world.
Yeah. So you would theoretically, recreate the character, in the correct system. I'm starting to get this.
Yeah, like normally you'd be going through the same system, but just occasionally to shake things up. It's like, this world... Things work differently. Make that exact same character in this system because now you have access to magic points.
Yeah, you just came from World War One, but now you're in high fantasy. So it's possible in this world alone, you can throw a fireball.
Yes.
But be very interesting. You know, something else you could do with that is you could find ways of transposing everything about your character from one world to the next. So, for example, if in World War One setting, I have a semi-automatic pistol. If I go to fantasy setting, that suddenly becomes magic missile or a rapid-firing bow or
it
something
like. It shifts when you go through the portal.
Exactly, yeah. And then, or if you have a huge knowledge of science, suddenly you have a huge knowledge of magic or religion or I don't know. I'd have to think this through, but that would be fun. All right, my third one, I'm going to go to an unsurprising place, even if it's a bit surprising here, which is Battletech. Now, I have played in a variety of Battletech-only games. So only the mechs, right? Where we go out with the robots, beat each other up. I've played in one-on-one tournaments. I've played in group-on-group tournaments. I have played in tons of that stuff. I've played Succession Wars. But I have never played Battletech the way that I run it, meaning with MechWarrior and the characters. That is something I would really like to do. The closest I got to that was many, many, many years ago. A friend of mine did run a very, very short Battletech game that was integrated with MechWarrior, but he was so nervous that I was going to setting lawyer him because I knew so much more about Battletech than he did. that despite my many promises, I wouldn't do that. He's a good guy, but he's kind of a nervous guy. And he was really worried I was going to setting lawyer him. And so the game never quite clicked. I don't count it because it never really fully took off. But I would love to play in a Battletech game with strong character elements. I want to have whole games where my mech is nowhere in sight. Mary, it's number three for you.
My last concept is a game where everybody is playing a paladin. It doesn't have to be D&D, but the idea of an armored knight who works for the church is something that I've always loved the idea of, because there's a series of books called The Elenium by David Eddings, where the main character is a church knight. And it's a world where you have a monotheistic church and you have a couple of other religions out there that are also equally real. But it was the first time I'd ever seen the idea of a paladin that could be more than just the stereotypical paladin. Like, all of these characters are real, fully nuanced, have very different views on the same religion. Something you don't usually get in a fantasy series.
Yeah.
Where you have a monotheism, but it's nuanced. But that concept of working for the church when the church is this real entity is something that's always been fascinating to me, but not something that has ever interested anybody else.
So I played in a campaign kind of like that. We didn't all have to be paladins, though, but we were working for the church, but we were a group that the church sends out when there is some sort of paranormal thing out there. This was actually, it was in D&D, but it was, for example, there was a vampire den out there. And so we were sent out, and we had clerics, paladins, a bard, but we were all part of the same sect of the church. We were working for the church. We were an arm of the church, and the classes were just to give us abilities. We were essentially the church's strike team to go out and deal with the things that could challenge the church's authority.
Yeah. And in this setting, the Elenium, it is specifically you are dealing with things like demonic forces and evil gods, and you're fighting their representatives on Earth. But yeah.
You know, in terms of diversifying the characters there, because that was something you mentioned in passing, I actually contemplated this once just as a mental exercise of, could I create a D&D style setting that is purely and genuinely monotheistic? And the way that I came up with breaking that down, because there is only one god, right? So you might have clerics of, say, some kind of demonic or extraplanar force or something like that. But there's not Torm and Tyr and Helm
and Hextor.
And, yeah, yes. Yeah, it doesn't go on like that. Was I started creating a differentiation based on orders. So people would model themselves based on what they felt called to do after a particular saint or after a particular disciple or some major figure or even something angelic within that religion. And then they still served the one god, but they would serve it through different sets of passions and gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And so that allowed me to kind of spread out the options for characters and the way they viewed the world without having to go back to, well, since you're trying to do well in business, that means you don't follow this god.
You follow the business
god. Yeah, you follow the business god.
But so this is completely opposite of what both of you have pitched, but you've inspired me for a game that I would love to run where the various churches of the gods, Torm, whatever, they all send a paladin out together on a mission. Like, a new continent's been found and you need to go and convert people to your god. But the churches all have to work together to book passage on a ship there.
Yeah.
So the party, each member of the party represents a different deity.
Yeah.
With their own separate goals, but they have to work together to get there and do their missions.
Well, and kind of a midpoint between these two ideas is another of the major elements that you can play with is the internal politics of the church. You're not playing the clergy, But there are a lot of different people in powerful roles that are trying to get elected, yep. trying to oh, yeah. backstab each other. Like, there's a lot of political machinations that
yep.
you can represent factions of within the church while you're still all under the same God.
That was a huge part of the game that I mentioned that I did get to play in. There was a lot of politics, and it was different people within the church could assign us on missions, and it was... we have angered this person within the church, so they're throwing their weight around and sending us on a suicide mission, or they're sending us on something really boring to waste our time and get us out of the way because they're going to make a power play.
Right. And that's the key, is to play the people who are not striving for that level of political power, but end up being pawns in the game.
Yep.
Doug, what is your number three?
My number three is based on like Cold War espionage, like spy and gadgets and stuff. So I had two thoughts. First thought was very much, you know, James Bond, Jason Bourne, doing dead drops and stuff. My second thought, while you guys were talking, it just kind of popped in my head, is being the assistant to James Bond and having to type out the reports and do the paperwork for exploding pins and stuff.
We could do an Inspector Gadget style game where none of us are Inspector Gadget.
No, we're all playing Q.
We're all Penny and yeah. Dog.
Penny and Brain. And yeah. What was the dog? Wasn't the dog Brain?
Right. Yeah, the dog is Brain.
I thought, yeah, it's what been a while since I watched that cartoon. But the closest I've ever come to doing anything like that is there's a prologue scene that you actually play. It's narrative, but you play it in a video game called We Happy Few. You work as a news redactor, and it basically drops these news stories in front of you, and you have to figure out which ones are acceptable to, like, the Politburo to publish versus which ones have to be redacted.
And so I was playing a campaign that was supposed to go across three different time periods, and the third arc was supposed to be Cold War espionage. We never got to that third arc. The campaign died before that. So I haven't had a chance to do that either. But that was something I had been thinking about, what my character was going to be and what that era of espionage would be like.
Yeah, now this got me thinking about is that I need to restart and actually finish Atomic Heart on easy. Holy crap, that game's difficulty curve when you come out of the... Anyway. Wildly off topic, but it is a fun video game, and I just... was a little bit too annoying for my taste, so I want to tone down the difficulty. But I think that closes out this topic. Check the show notes, like the last episode. If we mention anything that is not a super well-known product, whether that's a role-playing game or a book series or whatever, I will do my best to link those in the show notes if you're curious to look into those and find out about them. And other than that, have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time. This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2024. Listeners are free to use this episode in a non-commercial endeavor, so long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. If you wish to support this show and its related endeavors, you can do so at patreon.com/feartheboot.